Good morning. It's good seeing each and every one of you this morning. We're still in Judges, the third chapter. What have the children of Israel been doing? Okay. What else? That's a good one, then. That's right. Yeah. Now, there's some other things, too. Yeah. Now, group all those things together. Yeah. If you go back to verse 12, and the children of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord. They've been doing a number of things that Andy's been talking about. But they've been doing it over and over and over again. And that's what he's talking about. And the children of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord. So you see that not only one time or twice or thing, but again and again and again, they keep on doing evil. And we had left off with verse 14 is the last one we did. We're going to deal with verse 15. It says, but when the children of Israel cried out to the Lord, what did they cry out for?
Deliverance.
Okay. And have we heard that before? They do that. They do evil. They sin. Then they cry out. But it says nothing indicates that the Israel's cry included repentance or a commitment to keep the commandments. Think. They keep on falling into sin over and over again, and they cry out unto the Lord. Let's just talk about verse 15. But what did they didn't do? They didn't cry out for repentance. Said, tell them of the sins that we have committed over and over again. They don't mean to mention a word of that. They don't even talk about that. They haven't said, we have failed to do your commandments, obey your laws. Rarely was a plea for release from hardship. And they have been in the hardship. That's true. I'm not doubting that, and they're not doubting that. They've been slaves. And they've been oppressed, and they've been under oppression of this way, and they cried out to the Lord because of that, not because of their sins. Although the people had not changed, who knows that, the Lord raised up a deliverer for them, in this case, Ehud. What did he do? He raised up a deliverance for them. Because they keep on crying out. And why did he do that? What was one of the reasons we said Wednesday evening?
Pity on
them. And it's the grace of God that is the reason that he comes along and does this to deliver them from the oppression that they are under. He's testing them, he's talking about. And what is the test? Well, the test is to see what they're going to do. Are they going to obey his commandments or not? And we see there are they are not. They're not going to do it. So in verse 15, when the children of Israel cried out to the Lord raised up a deliverer for them. Ehud, Now, this is actually the second one. Who was the first one? Off the nail. Okay. Ehud, the son of Gerar, the Benjamite, a left-handed man. By him, the children of Israel sent tribute to Egon, or Eglon, king of Moab. Okay. What do you think he's talking about here? He's a Benjamite, but then it rests in things that he's a left-handed man. Man after my own heart. Do what?
10% of the population
of the world is right-handed. Okay. What does the term Benjamite mean?
He's descended from Benjamin.
Okay, but what else does it mean? I agree with you on that. Right-handed. Or the north hand. That's the reason you see a left-handed person is called the southpaw, because it's the south. So he makes a note that even though he's a Benjamite and is noted for being right-handed, that's where it's from, he said he is a left-handed man, but that's one of the things we're going to be talking about. He says, by him, which he's talking about Ehud, the children of Israel sent tribute to Eglon, king of Moab. Now, whether this is a one-time tribulation to it or this is something that they make all the time, because they are in servitude of the king of Moab, not really for sure. It may be on this particular time that he's going to add an Esther tribute to them. It says in verse 16, now Ehud made himself a dagger. Now Ehud made a dagger. It was a double edge and a cubit in length. Okay. What does that remind you of? Anything?
The ark.
Huh?
The cubit was used as a measurement for the ark.
Okay. Well, how much is, what's the length of an ark? Okay. I mean of a cubit.
On average about 18 inches.
Huh? Well, it's 18 inches, somewhere like that. If you want to take a ballpark guess, around 18 inches. And so he may say a double-edged sword is 18 inches. What did the Romans use? Soldiers. This is a type of a warry. This is when they talk about a sword or something like this, they really mean a dagger that they fight with. And so this is what he's making here. Ehud is making a double-edged sword here that is 18 inches in length. And fastened under his clothes on his right thigh, on the right side of his body. Now, if he's left-handed, why is he going to be put it on the right side? Is it easier to draw on your right hand or your left side? Okay. Don't really know, but I was asking that as a question. Yes. Yeah. And you think of what he's using. He's using it more as a dagger type or a fighting type sword. And if you use that in that way, they'll most likely put it on the right side or put it on the right thigh. It'd be quicker for him to get in. And most of the people... people think that he will be on the right side, but on the left side. I'll get it right out in a minute. And so he comes in with that underneath his clothes, and it's going to be a little bit quicker to use if he puts it on his right hand side or that way. So he brought the tribute to Eglon, king of Moab. Now, Eglon was a very fat man, okay? I'm not going to make no fat jokes either. Sorry. Huh? I already got orders not to do a fat joke. But it's important here in this instance why they bring that in there that he was a fat man. That Eglon was a heavy set king, as it was. Now, you think about this. This is really, Ehud is planning his assassination out. He thinks that this is a mission for him to do. And that's the reason some people think that this is a special tribute, because he is planning this mission or this assassination to kill Eglon to help deliver the children of Israel. And that's what he's for. He's the deliverer. Ehud is the deliverer. And in most cases you'll see it's going to be in fighting, it's going to be in war, and he's going to start off with that way by killing the king. So he is planning to do this right here is to assassinate the king, it seems like that way. And this seems like a good plan that he's going to enter into. Any questions right now? Comments? All right, if he goes on and says, verse 18, and when he had finished presenting the tribute, he sent away the people who had carried the tribute. Now, this is Ehud sending away the people that carried the tribute, the Israelites. And he told them to go on, and he says in verse 19, but he himself turned back from the stone image or the foreign gods, what he's talking about here, the stone images, which were at Gilgal, and said to the king, he says, I have a secret message for you, O king. Okay? This part of the plan, this is going to pique his interest here. And it's like I said, that's the reason that they think that this may be a special tribute that he's bringing to them, because he says, I have a secret message for you, O king, when he brings the tribute. This is to go along with the tribute. He said, keep silence. And all who attended him went out from him. This is Ehud. I'm not Ehud, but Eglon. To send out his servants from him. So it will be Ehud and Eglon by themselves. Now, they are alone. So in verse 20, so Ehud came to him. Now he was sitting upstairs in his cool private chamber. Then Ehud said, I have a message from God for you. So he arose from his seat. Okay. So I have a message now. He had told me beforehand, I have a secret message for you, O king. Then he tells in verse 20that I have a message from God for you. Why would he? What's the reason for all this? I have a message from God for you. Is there a reason for that? And so Eglon rose from his seat when he heard. And some of them think this. If you look at some of these heathen nations, And this is what we're talking about here, Moab is. And when you're talking about your God, of course, a lot of times they will make fun of your God and everything like that. Says your God is not as good as my God. Your God is weak compared to my God. And that's the reason we're in control and you're not or anything. But they still have a great respect for their servants or their peoples or who they have under bondage under them for their gods. And this is the reason he probably is telling them. He says, now, I have a message for you. He told him, he says, I have a secret message for you. This one message is for you, Eglon. This is from Ehida. I have a message for you. And he says, now, this one is from God. And so when you see him and he talk about it, he said, so Eglon rose from his seat, showing probably that he has some respect or honor for his God. And then he is presenting a message to him. And it's a secret message, or a message particularly for Ehud, the king. Not Ehud, but Eglon, the king. I'll just say the king. I'm getting messed up on that. But Ehud has one for the king. He says, I have a secret message from you, for you, from our God. And the king raises up from his seat. All right, verse 21. Then Ehud reached with his left hand and took the dagger from his right thigh and thrust it into his belly. Okay. Over there. All right. Even the hilt. Okay, now, we're talking about a dagger here, or a sword, 18 inches long. Double-edged sword. 18 inches long. Somewhere around there, 18 inches. And it says, it even went up to the hilt, or part of the handle, but into the belly of the king. And the fat closed over the blade. For he did not draw the dagger out of his belly, and his entrail came out of that. So, two things. He went deep, and he had force with it. This was part of his plan. He was going to kill the king. This is it. This is one of the start of the deliverance here of the Israelites. Ehud planned this. This was his mission here. And he comes in and he tells them, he says, okay, and he's following along and his plan seems to be working very well or perfect. And he stabs him with the dagger and pulls it in with such force and thing, it goes all the way in. The 18 inches plus the up to the hilt, everything like that. And he didn't draw it out. And his entrail came out also. They said the fat closed around it, but he didn't pull his blade out. And that may be a couple of reasons, or some reasons for that too. He didn't want the blood all over him from the king, or, you know, from Steph. He didn't want him to, when he pull it out, all the entrail, the colons, all that stuff will be coming out with it. He didn't want that to happen or anything like this. So he pulled it out, or did not pull it out. Any questions or comments, so forth? Excuse me. Then Ehud went out through the porch and shut the doors of the upper room behind him and locked them. Okay. Now, Now, plan is working, and he's still going along with it, and it's part of his plan here. Okay, I got to have a way to come in. I got the tribute to come in. I got to have a way to get the king and me just by ourselves. Now I have to escape from this. And he said, then Ehud went out through the doors, and he went out through on the porch side, and he locked the doors. And he said, well, why did that? Well, verse 24, when he had gone out, Eglon's servants came to look. And to their surprise, the doors of the upper room were locked. So they said, he is probably attending to his needs in the cool chambers. In other words, they think he's gone to the bathroom or to the toilet. That it is. And they didn't want to disturb him. Okay, they know he's by himself there. And he says, you know, we can't come in, but we come in, the door's locked. So they're going to think that the king is in there using the bathroom, so they're going to give him time. And then you go to verse 25, it says, so they waited till they were embarrassed. And still he had not opened the door of the upper room. Therefore, they took the key and opened them, and there was their master fallen dead on the floor. Okay, now the king's dead. And they opened the doors, got the keys, opened the doors, and there he is dead on the floor. But Ehud had escaped while they delayed and passed beyond the stone images or the foreign gods or whatever the temple thing to where they keep them to God, and passed beyond the stone image and escaped to Sarai. Felt that, okay, now I gotta have escape. I got out. Now I gotta go to a place where they probably will not come after me with it. I'll be far enough ahead with it. If my plan works, then I'll be far enough ahead, then they will not come after me. And I think the safe place, if I get to the stone images or beyond that right there, I shall be safe. And apparently he was that way. So he had a plan, he had a mission to kill the king of Moab. And remember now that the children of Israel are servants under the king of Moab. And so now the Lord has picked Ehud. Remember, the Lord is the one that picks the deliverer. And Ehud is the deliverer, and it's going to be usually through the standpoint of being military leadership. And so what better way to lead than to go in to assassinate the king? And so that's what he did. He had worked out a plan, and apparently the plan worked. Any questions on that or comments? He had to do something other for the children of Israel to follow him. And so he chose this way. It looks like, I got a mission, I got a plan, and if I assassinate the king and I do it the right way, and the people see, the children of Israel see that it's done, what I have done for them, this is not for me. This is for them, the children of Israel. Then I believe, if it's part of his mission here, part of his plan, I think that he said, thinks that they're going to follow him now. All right. Verse 27. And it happened when he arrived, this is Ehud, that he blew the trumpet of the mountain in the mountains of Ephraim. And the children of Israel went down with him from the mountains, and he led them. Okay? So he went through his country land. He's a Benjamite. Went through Benjamin. And goes, gets troops now from the mountains up in Ephraim. And he said, all right. And he went there and he blew the horn. Now, there's, when you hear the trumpet or the horn or something like that come, they make certain sounds. And in this one, he blew the trumpet or the horn to let them know that this is preparation for battle. And so they came down from the mountains. Then in verse 28, he says, then he said to them, follow me, for the Lord has delivered your enemies, the Moabites, into your hand. All right. He tells them now, first of all, now you follow me. Now, I don't know if they know what he did or what he has done for them or what, but he gives credit to the Lord. He says, follow me. Why? Why follow me? Well, the Lord has delivered your enemies. And he tells them who the enemies are. The Moabites into your hand, okay? You have the hand now. Why? Because you have the power of the Lord. Because the Lord has delivered. Has delivered you, the enemies, into your hand. So they went down after him, seized the fords of the Jordan leading to Moab, and did not allow anyone to cross over. All right. To prevent the Moabites from fleeing, and to prevent the Moabites' reinforcement from entering the battle, the Ephraimites seized the fords of the Jordan leading to Moab. So he did it for two reasons. Were to keep them from fleeing, from them running away, and to stop them from having reinforcements come in. So, it looks like Ehud has this planned out pretty well. Now, who do you think probably told him all this? Because he gave glory to God with that. And he gave the credit to God for it. So I'm going to give credit to God that he's the one that told Ehud, this is what you're going to do. Verse 29, and at that time they killed about 10,000 men of Moab, all stout men of valor. Not a man escaped. 10,000. Not just 10,000 men. But they killed about 10,000 men of Moabites or Moab that were stout men of valor. They had strength. They were valor. They were what you call men of military force. And they killed them. 10,000 of them. Verse 30. So Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Israel, and the land had rest for 80 years. That's a long time. 80 years they have rest. Now, when I say the word rest, or the Bible here says rest, what is the Bible referring to?
Peace.
Peace? Anything else?
In this case, I think it's recurring to the fact that they weren't being harassed or harried by the Canaanites. Because maybe they were being a little bit more obedient because of the quality of the victory they had under Ehud's leadership.
Would you want to go fight the Israelites right now? Of stout, mighty men of Moab. See what a reputation that would have? Who they killed? And they killed 10,000 of them. And you can see the long period of time that they had, that they had peace, friends with the enemy, other enemies, the other heathen there. And so he says Moab was subdued. Moab had been the conqueror. They had been under Moab. But he said now Moab was subdued. In other words, Moab didn't want to go after them either. They didn't want to fight them. And I don't blame them. I wouldn't want to fight them either. If they kill 10,000 of our strong men, I don't have nothing to do with the children of Israel right now. And there's a period of time, there's 80 years, that they had peace, harmony with the other nations, that they say, look, see what they did? And I don't want to be nothing to do with them. Then verse 31, I should about close it out. And after him, Shamgar, the son of Anath, who killed 600 men of the Philistines with an ox goat, and he also delivered Israel. Now, here's your third one. One line. He is mentioned in the fourth or fifth chapter. Deborah mentioned him just a headline, his name. And as listing the judges. But he says, look, and after him, after Ehud, Shamgar. What did Shamgar do? And I'm assuming that when I see this, who killed 600 men of the Philistines, that he killed them himself. And but the thing is, with an ox goat. You know what an ox goat is?
A stick.
Yeah.
That was some more ox goat.
Huh? Yeah, this is an antique, 3rd century, I think, ox goat. There have been all kinds of ox goat from then on. But this was a shorter version of it. But you see how they had to point it in at the edge that they can point it into the oxen's to get them to speed along. And also, what do you think that hook's there for?
Do
what?
Put it up
out of here. Okay, there's a number of reasons. People, different things they used it for. Matter of fact, some of them used it for cleaning out the plow. What's that?
Most sensitive part.
Yeah.
Understand. And then you'll see them in our modern day, you'll see people using an ox goat at a 4-H fair that we can keep their cows still that they're showing. And it's not as elaborate as that.
Yeah. have some newer type two. I said a year because I think that's a third century one. I want to try to go back when it first, a long time ago, that they are much longer, that they can go on and reach to the front of the oxen that way to get their attention first, and then you have the hook or the spear to jab into them, do it that way, and to drive them so that you can, basically what they're trying to do is two factors, they said. Get them where they can go just a little bit faster with it, everything like that, with it, and plow harder. Because they're using them to plow. But that's the end of the third chapter, and we'll begin the fourth chapter, Lord willing, Wednesday evening.